Well, welcome back. Dr. Miller and I are happy to be talking to you again. And I'm wondering how you did with the first week's homework assignments. We gave you a lot of different methods. And my hope is that you tried out several of the methods and found one or two at least that really made a difference for you, that seemed to interrupt the negative momentum you may have fallen into and helped you to align with a more positive path.
Well, some of them sure worked for me.
And that's a good sign, because we do try to practice what we preach, and I'll have some stories about that as well during this week. For this week, I'll let Dr. Miller talk a little bit about some of the theoretical foundations of this week's topic, which is how to handle difficult thoughts.
Well, you know, 400 years ago, Shakespeare wrote, "There's nothing either good or bad. It's thinking that makes it so." He placed those words in Hamlet's mouth. Even though Hamlet was a prince, even though he lived in a castle, because of the mental turmoil he was going through at that time, his castle seemed to him like a prison. Some of us feel also like we're in a prison, even though we are surrounded by a beautiful palace and embarrassment of riches. And all you have to do is walk out into the garden on a sunny day, and you can see that that's true. Well, there are two very important realizations a person can have in their life. Number one is when you realize that your thoughts and your emotions are behaviors. They're internal behaviors. And just like Hamlet, your emotional state is actually the result of your thoughts. Nothing and no one can make you feel sad or angry or depressed. I mean, even though people say all the time, "Oh, you made me so angry," or "That got me so depressed," or so eager to blame something doing it to us, but in fact, it is we who are doing it to ourselves. Your attitude and your interpretation of what's happening around you are the prime determinants of how you feel about yourself, your life, your world, and about everyone else. Because your attitudes and your interpretations determine what your thoughts will be. Your thoughts, in turn, create your emotions. The second realization is that because your thoughts and your emotions are your behaviors, you can, if you really want to, change them. You have the power and the right to change your thoughts and your emotions. There's an old riddle that medical students like to pose to each other. What's the difference between a normal person, a psychotic person, and a neurotic person? Well, if you ask a normal person how much is 2 plus 2, they say 4. If you ask a psychotic, he says 19, or Paris Hilton, or purple. Ask a neurotic how much is 2 plus 2, and he says 4, but it really pisses me off. It's kind of a joke, but actually there's an important truth hidden in that little riddle. Think about it. If things aren't going well for you in your relationship, or work, or if your last project didn't work out as well as you wished, or if Mary Lou won't go to the dance with you. These are simply facts. There's no intrinsic emotional meaning to these facts. It all depends on what your wants and wishes and expectations were, and then you react. And your emotional reaction to those facts is completely dependent upon your thoughts, your beliefs, and your attitudes. And Jonathan, what's that one you tell about the businessman who wanted to learn about heaven and hell?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite stories. This businessman sees a monk near a temple, and he goes up to him in a voice accustomed to instant obedience. He says, "Well, if you're so wise, why don't you teach me a lesson about heaven and hell?" So the monk looks up at the businessman and says, "Teach you about heaven and hell? I couldn't teach you anything. You know, you're ugly, you're disgusting, your breath is bad, you look like a total moron, you probably don't have a caring bone in your entire body. Why don't you just get out of my face and stop wasting my time? Well, this enrages this guy. He gets red in the face, he shakes with rage, and he gets ready to punch the monk in the face. An instant before he throws his punch, the monk looks him in the eye and says, "That's hell." Well, the businessman's overwhelmed that this monk risked getting beaten up just to teach him this lesson about hell. He unclenches his fist, and in a bow of gratitude, he bows to the monk. And the monk says, "And that's heaven." You know what I really like about that story, Emma, is that it shows how important and powerful our interpretations are. Because this businessman created a moment of hell for himself by thinking that he was being criticized for no good reason. And then 20 seconds later, he creates a moment of heaven and gratitude for himself because he had a new interpretation of the exact same words. And we're doing that all the time in our life. You know, it may seem that some events are good or bad, but it's really always our interpretation. And I know when some of the most difficult times in my life have happened, I've interpreted them at that time as bad, but looking back on them now, I could say, wow, that was a turning point. If it weren't for that, I would not be in the place I am now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true. And one of the things that we've learned in recent years, we've learned a tremendous amount about how thinking takes place and about how the mind and the brain relate with each other. The mind and the brain are closely related, but they're not the same. As a metaphor, if you can think of the brain as kind of like a book, and it's a book is made up of a cover and has pages, it has ink, it has staples in it, and so forth. In the same way, the brain has neural cells, it has glial cells, it has neurons, and so forth. But the important thing about a book is the story that's in the book. And in the same way, just as the information in the book has a certain relationship to that book, so too our mind has that certain relationship to our brain. And so it's really important to understand some of the things that we've discovered about our brain. And one of the things that we all should be aware of by this time is that the vast majority of the decisions that you make and have made in your life were made in a part of the brain that you have no direct conscious access to. Sometimes it's called the unconscious or the subconscious part of your mind, and where it lives in your brain is a part that developed very early on in the evolution of the mammalian nervous system. It's called the paleocortex. All higher animals have a similar part in their brains. That's why we can train a dog to do tricks, or we can train a horse to perform perfectly in the riding arena. This part of the brain is really good at repeating what has been taught, but it doesn't have what we call conscious awareness. It cannot do higher order thinking. It can't be very creative. Your dog may be very smart, but you must realize that it doesn't do an awful lot of really creative thinking. It's we human beings can do that kind of thinking. So I want to talk about that deeper part of the mind. Can you remember learning the alphabet when you learned to read and write? First, it was a letter A, and then there was a B. And then there was a C you had to learn, and then a D, and then suddenly you had to learn that there was a difference between the small b and the small d, that they were kind of flipped over, and then there was an E, and on and on. And for a long time, you had to take going over this, learning to carefully write each of those letters, and then how to recognize words like cat and dog. And it took a long time for this inner part of your brain to learn these things. And it was this part that was learning, just as if you're training a dog or a horse. But now, after years of practicing, soon you're reading sentences and soon you're reading paragraphs. But now, if you look at a page full of words, they're automatically read for you. In fact, it's almost impossible for you to look at words on a page without this part of your mind automatically reading them, even if you don't want to. And so this part of your mind was programmed by the environment you grew up in. It was programmed by your family, your friends, your school, and by television, by the movies, and by the media, long before you had any idea that you were being programmed to think in certain ways. You were, in fact, being taught to think in that way. And you had no concept of there being a different way to think. So you learned to read, to play sports, to sing, or play a musical instrument, all behaviors that are generally pretty positive and useful to you in your life. But on the other hand, you also learned a set of negative reactions and negative thoughts, behaviors that don't enhance your life, behaviors and thinking that act as filters that block out positive feelings that you could be having. This paleocortex, this limbic system, determines your feelings, whether you're happy or sad. That limbic system is the emotional center of your brain. So what's keeping you back from being happy are ways of mentally processing your experiences in the world. And you tend to process many things in the way that you learn to process them during frustrating times in your early childhood, multiplied by repeated negative events that you have experienced along the way. And basically, if you're anything other than happy and thrilled with each new day, then this part of your mind is still reproducing these negative thoughts. We were born with the built-in automatic ability to be happy, and we could still be that way, but something went wrong.
You can see something went wrong just by seeing the difference between children and adults. You know, children are laughing 100 times a day, according to the latest studies. The average 4-year-old laughs 104 times a day. The average 13-year-old laughs twice. Well, the world didn't become less funny. It's just that we're programmed by our culture to focus on negative more than positive, and it eventually takes its toll on us.
Exactly. In our culture, we're not taught the power of our thoughts. We were taught what to think, not how to think. We weren't taught how to guide our thoughts to produce the life that we want and the emotions that we really want to have. In today's world, we've all been taught to, as they said in school, compare and contrast. We're busy trying to spot conflicts and errors, and how to react with submission, withdrawal, or aggression. After all, these are the states of mind that advertising, political propaganda, and terrorism want us to be in. The result is that our limbic systems, that emotion-generating part of our paleocortices, they react by going into a stress mode. Houston, we have a problem. Stress is an automatic reaction of this unconscious part of your brain, which has been programmed through evolution to react with a fight or flight response whenever it perceives conflict, demand, or threat. It pumps stress chemicals into your body to break down tissue, actually breaks down the muscles and the organs of your body into sugar so they can be converted into energy, because this part of your brain actually believes that there's a lion attacking you and clawing away at your back. And so it wants you to convert everything into energy so that you can best respond to what it feels is this immediate physical threat to your life and limb. It then sends your mind into high gear. Along with that, there are these emotional chemicals of fear and anxiety and apprehension that flow throughout your body, this tension. One of these chemicals you've heard of is cortisol, but there's a whole bunch of them. Unfortunately, in the environment that we're living in now, these responses are futile, because the stressors in our lives are not landslides and saber-toothed tigers. What we have to confront are social stressors, like a speech you have to give or a difficult relationship you have to deal with.
Or the fact that your company needs to downsize, or the fact that you don't know where you're going to get the money to pay your income tax this year.
In fact, these responses are worse than futile, since the continual stress chemicals break down your immune system, as well as the other systems of your body. And their effect on your brain is to limit your mental energy and your creativity. And that's how stress ends up being responsible for most of our illnesses and all of our unhappiness. And in today's high-speed world, there are more and more stressful demands on our attention all the time. You can't get away. At any moment, your cell phone can ring. Even when you're in the bathroom, you can't get away.
I read recently that, according to the American Medical Association, something like 80 or 90% of all illness is supposedly due to stress. Some amazing statistic like that.
Yeah, that may be a little bit low as an estimate, actually. But the result, of course, and the reason and how we become ill is that your entire system becomes exhausted. And then you begin to see first the signs of illness or imbalance, and then you begin to actually experience symptoms, such as feelings of helplessness and hopelessness, or persistent sadness or moodiness, tearfulness or angry outbursts, even feelings of worthlessness and self-hatred.
And even serious physical illness can result.
Right. And see, as that situation continues, all of these build up to the point where we can even call it a clinical depression, where you have persistent worry, anxiety, or even thoughts of self-harm. This is how the SAD, the SAD, pattern works. Stress leads to anxiety, which in turn leads to depression. And it all begins right there between your ears, with your thoughts. The world has changed over the last few hundred thousand years, and it's time we updated our internal biocomputer. We need to program this subconscious part of our minds so that it has the kinds of feelings that will help us survive in the environment we currently live in, as opposed to the African jungles where we evolved.
So it's, in a way, time to upgrade our operating systems to improve our attitude and our state of mind, and also our performance, so that we can achieve success and feel happiness here in this incredibly beautiful world we've been born into. In fact, you might think of the clever methods and activities and homework assignments that we have as a kind of software for your mind. Each is another possibility for shifting your state of consciousness and your goals from feeling stressed and depressed to the feeling of happiness and blessed.
Today you will learn how to override the programming of this part of your mind and create the kinds of feelings and emotional reactions that are really helpful and enjoyable for you.
And remember, most of the important part of that programming happened while you were a child, long before you had any idea that your mind belongs to you and that you're free to decide how you want to think, feel, and react. In effect, we're not living in the present. We're merely repeating negative events from our past. And this is true whether you feel really depressed a lot of the time or if you feel okay but would simply like to experience more happiness in your life.
And here's a great way to prove to yourself how the things you learned early in your life still continue to govern your behavior and your feelings, even when it's not even very useful to you. So do this now. Swallow 3 times. No problem, right? Now, try this. Go get a large tablespoon and fill it with spit until it's completely filled with spit, and then put it in your mouth and swallow it. Ew, disgusting thought, isn't it? You'll probably find that even imagining it creates a feeling of disgust, and yet it doesn't make any sense at all, because this is the same spit that you just swallowed 3 times. The only sense that this makes is that very early on in your life, you were taught to feel disgusted by the thought of taking your saliva back into your mouth. And if you think you're in control, go and try this experiment. On the other hand, if you had been raised on a Polynesian island, you would have grown accustomed to watching the tribal virgins peeling roots of the kava-kava plant, chewing them until they're small and moist, and then spitting the resulting slush into a large bowl. And it would not be disgusting at all to share in the ceremonial drinking of this sacred tea that evening. And if you'd grown up in the jungles of Brazil, you would find a toasted tarantula to be a treat worth looking forward to. And you would not be able to understand, on the other hand, why your visitors from North America were completely grossed out when you offered them this delicious snack. On the other hand, you would become sick to your stomach when you heard that your visitors drink milk. Milk from a cow? How could you drink secretions from an animal?
Sounds disgusting. It really all is in your mind. It's a powerful moment when you realize that your mind and thinking create how you feel, and that it's possible to change how you think. And one of the best ways to take charge of your mind is to become aware of when you're thinking negative thoughts that are not helpful to you. And that's what this part of this program is all about. It's about learning to recognize automatic negative thought patterns and how to lessen their impact or replace them with more realistic and empowering thoughts. But before we go into specific ways to lessen the impact of negative thoughts, we want to mention a couple of ideas for how to step out of the stress, anxiety, and depression cycle that are important to know. First of all, while this program is about changing you and your thoughts and your emotions, if you can easily change some situation in your life, something in your environment that's causing you trouble, then of course, feel free to do so. The reason we're not emphasizing that now in this program is because we don't know what the situations are that you're in. So it's hard to give specific advice about that. Also, as you overcome some of your negative thoughts, you'll have a more clear head, which will be able to assess what in your environment needs to be changed. You know, some people struggle with whether or not to leave a mate or what to do with their child or a job. Well, those are all important situations. So if one is easily changed and you know would make a difference, well, of course, do that. Now, the reason why we focus on the internal methods of this program is because we can't give specific advice about how to change the situations that you're in, the problems that you have. But those often are definitely a contributing factor to the sad cycle. And as you become more clear-headed by using these many methods, you'll more clearly see what needs to be changed and what you may just have to live with, because we all have situations which cause us stress. But if you're not adding your own stress on top of that by thinking negatively, hopefully those situations won't be so harmful to you.
So if you can get rid of something that's producing a lot of negativity in your life, by all means, do so. But if you can't, remember, your second option is to change how you react. Change how you respond.
Quite true. Now, another important factor that keeps the stress, anxiety, and depression cycle going is troubles with sleep. And we are going to cover this in some detail in our next session. But for this week, if you are having trouble sleeping, make it a priority to get as good a sleep as possible, whether that might involve going to your doctor or healthcare practitioner or turning off the TV an hour or two before you go to sleep so you can kind of calm down. Those are all good suggestions. Also, the first several power meditations that we have for you on our power meditation CD or download, it can be very useful in calming down and letting go of stress right before you go to sleep. And that can be very helpful because if you're not sleeping well, it's going to be very hard to feel better. So although we go into depth about this next week, I do want to make a plug that you do everything you can to get as good a night's sleep as possible. And sometimes that just involves scheduling more time for sleep because most Americans don't get the 8 hours that they typically need. Okay, as we talked about, if you can eliminate negative thought patterns, that is going to make a huge difference in every part of your life because wherever you go, there you are. And as they studied what helps people who are struggling with stress or anxiety or depression, they have found that one form of therapy always ranks on top in terms of its effectiveness. And that form of therapy is called CBT, which stands for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. And what that really means is when you change your thoughts, you change how you feel, and you change your attitude.
And of course, cognitive means what you're thinking. So we're changing certain behaviors, thinking behaviors. We're changing how you think, the images that you create within your mind, and in so doing, you change how you feel. And so you don't have to need therapy in order to use these powerful tools for changing.
You know, when you think about it, most people, they have a story in their head about their life, and that story is usually pretty negative. You know, most people don't have a story in their head that goes how blessed they are and how grateful they are that they have money and health and that they have a computer and they have a telephone. Most of our stories are what I call our unique self-pity story. You can really go around and listen to yourself or ask other people about their life, and really what they'll tell you is their unique self-pity story. And that story is about what is wrong in their life or what is not working out the way they would like. And when you develop this story and you believe it, it starts to affect every part of your emotions. I mean, I went through this yesterday. I had a couple things happen to me that didn't go the way I wanted. I started to realize that I had this story going on in my head. And one of the things I did was I actually wrote down the story going on in my head. Now, when something is in your head, it all makes sense. It all makes impression like it's true. But when I wrote it out, I saw that it was pretty ridiculous. And what was ridiculous is that I was making certain common thought mistakes. And one of the handouts for this week's session is called Common Thought Mistakes. And as I wrote out the story in my head, which took about 5 minutes, I saw that I had made many of these thought mistakes and that what was going on in my head really was not true. And this is something that you can do. And Dr. Miller and I are going to go through 11 common thought mistakes that are covered briefly in this handout and show you examples of each one. And many of them will probably sound very familiar because you probably have thought something similarly in the last day or two. And one of the most common thought mistakes is what we call overgeneralization. And in the handout, we describe it as you make a sweeping negative conclusion that goes beyond the current situation, or you view a negative event as a never-ending pattern of defeat. An example of this might be thinking, I'm never going to find someone who really loves me, or things never work out for me. And in fact, that's what happened to me yesterday. A couple things didn't work out. I said, I never catch a break. And when I did that overgeneralization, it started to affect my mood. So the first step is to catch yourself thinking in negative patterns. And overgeneralization is one of the most common ones.
Like if I drop a piece of toast, it always lands on the butter side. Or if I plan to go away for the weekend, it always rains.
Right.
You don't. We think that, and for a moment, it kind of seems that way, but it's not true. Don't think that.
Mm-hmm. Going down this list, another common thought mistake is called the mental filter. An example of this is, I describe it on that page as you pay undue attention to one negative detail instead of seeing the whole picture. You dwell on the negatives and ignore the positives. So an example of this might be, Tom said he liked me, but he probably doesn't really. Here, something positive happened, but you dwell on maybe a look he gave you or something like that. And what is unfortunate about mental filters is it just eliminates the positive. You know, yesterday I had a lot of positive things happening, but because this one bad thing happened and I focused on that, it kind of filtered out all the blessings in my life.
Or I'm driving along with a friend of mine. There's a woman driving a car up in front, and she makes a left-hand turn from the white right lane. He goes, "There you go, women drivers." As if women drivers make all the mistakes, how come they only have half as many accidents as men?
Right. So a third common thought mistake is all or nothing thinking. I write here about you view a situation in only two categories instead of on a continuum. You look at things in absolute black and white categories. And once you hear about these thought mistakes, you'll see yourself and other people do them all the time. Examples of this might be saying to yourself, "I always have the worst luck," or "I never catch a break," or "the other line always moves faster." In reality, life is much more subtle and nuanced, and there is no such thing as an always or never. In fact, you can catch yourself doing these thought mistakes by catching yourself saying the words always and never.
In fact, always and never are two words you should always remember never to say.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that one. Okay. How about fortune telling? I describe this as you predict the future negatively without considering other more likely outcomes. Another way of describing this is jumping to conclusions. An example of this might be, I failed so many times, I'll probably fail this time too. You know, just because you failed three times before doesn't mean that you're going to fail this next time. In fact, most entrepreneurs, the first sign of them being successful is that they have had to have gone through several failures. So fortune telling, where you predict the future, is certainly not helpful. Another one is labeling. You put a fixed global label on yourself or others without considering that the evidence might be that there's a less disastrous conclusion you could come to. Instead of saying, "I made a mistake," you tell yourself, "I'm a loser. I'm a jerk." Or, "I'm such an idiot for forgetting where I put my glasses." Well, those types of global labels really can interfere with your self-esteem. And when you label other people that way, it makes you more judgmental and it prevents you from seeing them more accurately. Once again, this is really a type of black or white thinking. Mind reading. That's one of my favorites. You believe you know what others are thinking and fail to consider other more likely possibilities. This is really jumping to conclusions about people. You assume that people are acting negatively towards you or other types of mind reading. An example here might be, if she really liked me, she would have emailed me right away. Well, you don't know what's really going on with somebody. And when you think that you do, and you interpret other people's actions through a negative filter, it really is a very common thought mistake.
In a way, that's kind of like the biggest fear of people in our country is giving a public speech, speaking in front of a group of people. You get up there and you feel afraid. And in your mind, you're thinking, these people are going to judge me. They're going to criticize me. They're not going to like the clothes I'm wearing. If you stutter a little bit, you think, everybody's seeing that. And look, they're all looking at me. And 98% of the time, you're wrong.
Quite true. Here's one that I see all the time. It's discounting the positives. You tell yourself that positive experiences or your accomplishments or qualities don't count. You know, try complimenting somebody and see if they can take it in. Most of the time, they won't. You know, I said to a coworker not too long ago, "God, you're really good at your job, and I really appreciate that." And they say, "I'm not any good at my job. I just got lucky." No, they didn't get lucky. They're really good at their job. But most people discount the positives, and therefore they don't get to savor those positive feelings. So that's one that you can definitely look for and is very common. Here's one, I call it emotional reasoning. You think something must be true because you feel it so strongly, and you ignore or discount evidence to the contrary. You reason from what you feel, like, I feel like an idiot, so I must be one. Well, that type of thinking does not take you very far in life. An example of this might be, even though he said good things about me, I know he doesn't like me. Well, maybe because he did say good things about you, he really does like you, and you're just misinterpreting. So that's one to look for as well. Magnification and minimization is the next one on the common thought mistake list. And this one is when you evaluate yourself or another person or a situation, you have a tendency to greatly magnify the negative or minimize the positive. You blow things out of proportion or you shrink their importance. An example here might be, the report was a disaster because I misspelled a couple words. You know, perfectionists fall into this category, and if you're a perfectionist, well, I hope this program will change you a little bit, because I myself am a recovering perfectionist, and it's a real problem, because if you need everything to be perfect before you're happy, well, then you won't be happy for very long.
Here's another one, a woman thinking at dinner, ooh, he noticed that I spilled something on my dress. I know he said he would go out with me again, but now I bet he doesn't call.
Right. So you magnify something, or you see something as much worse than it really is, and therefore you get down on yourself or get down on other people. And the last two, next to the last one is called personalization. You believe others are behaving negatively because of you without considering more plausible explanations. You blame yourself for something you weren't entirely responsible for, or you blame other people and overlook the ways you contributed to the problem. Here's an example of personalization. You say to yourself, he was late because he didn't want to be around me. Well, there's other possibilities, but if you take everything personally, then you start to become a little bit paranoid and overly negative.
Or, John's in a terrible mood. It must have been something I did. Or it's obvious Mary doesn't like me, otherwise she would have said hello.
Yep. I see personalization in people who are a little bit paranoid and are anxious. And so if you tend to fall into those categories, you might look for it in your own thinking. And last but not least, should statements. You have a precise, fixed idea of how you or others should behave, and you overestimate how bad it is that these expectations are not met. You criticize yourself with shoulds or shouldn'ts or musts or oughts. For example, I should have remembered his wife's name, or I should have brought him a nicer gift.
When I look at my life and I see all the things that are going well, I should be happy. I shouldn't be getting angry.
And it's very important not to should all over yourself, because if you do, then you won't have many happy moments in your life. So those are the common thought mistakes, and they will show up in your life, and you'll become more aware of them now that we mention them. You know, it's kind of like if you buy a green Honda, soon you're amazed that there's green Hondas all over the town that you didn't see before. It's not that everybody bought a green Honda, it's that now you're more aware of green Hondas, so now you see them more often.
All right, when you look down and you see that you need new tires, you see tire sales everywhere you go.
Yeah, right. You know, when I was a teen, I had a lot of destructive thought patterns, and I had a lot of self-dislike, and I really had to try a lot of different methods to see if I could get out of these destructive patterns. And there was some urgency involved, because some of my negative thought patterns were actually suicidal. So I tried a lot of different methods. And of course, the first method is just to be aware of what is. You know, yesterday when I was having a little bit of a hard time, I wrote out my thoughts. And when I saw it in black and white, I saw how ridiculous a lot of them were. And what CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy, does is it encourages you to write out your negative thought patterns. Because by seeing them and becoming more aware of them, it helps to distance you from those thought patterns. You know, in your head, everything seems to make sense. But when you write it out, you can see, no, that's really not true. Or when a friend of yours says something about their life, you can then say, that's ridiculous. But to them, it's not ridiculous because when it's in our head, it's very hard to have that disidentification that is so necessary to lessen the impact of negative thoughts.
Yeah, some research that was done by Pennebaker, in which most of us have things that we feel guilty about or we feel ashamed of that we hide from other people. And so what he had people do is every day for 4 days, they were to spend 15 minutes writing out what they were ashamed of, what they felt guilty about, what they were negative about in their lives, what they felt uptight about. Following that, they felt better. Even though they didn't show it to anyone, just getting out of their head, getting to express it, and also looking at it, and as a part of your brain goes, yeah, you know, that's a bunch of crap, you know, you're just wasting your time with that. Even if you don't think it consciously, a part of you can go through the process of thinking that. Well, what was really interesting is he then examined them over the next 6 months and found that they had enhanced immune function over the next 6 months as compared with people who hadn't done that writing exercise. This is how closely all of these things are tied together. So getting yourself to feel better doesn't just take you out of depression, help you with stress, and help you eliminate your anxiety, but it really literally brings health into your physical body.
Now, I mentioned that one way to get some distance from these negative thoughts is to write them out and to write them down, because that's really the first step in a two-step process. And if you see, part of this week's handouts is you have a sheet that is called, I believe it's called the rebuttal sheet or something like that. And what that sheet is it allows you a space to write out what your negative thought patterns are. And then it gives you a space to write out a rebuttal. And if you look at that sheet, you'll see that it has several places where you have an old thought pattern, and then you can write in your rebuttal to that thought pattern. And I'm going to give a couple examples now so that you can better understand this process. Let's say you wake up and you say to yourself something negative like, oh God, I'm going to have to go through another long day and nobody cares and I don't feel very well. Well, just writing that out and then writing out your response, rebuttal to that can be very, very useful. So what would be a rebuttal to that? Well, your rebuttal shouldn't be something that you can't believe. It should be something that really makes sense to you. So in this case, it might be, oh, in the morning, I always feel a little sluggish and I get down on myself. But soon I'll be at work and I'll be enjoying my friends and I'm sure I'll feel better. That would be a simple example. Now on the fill in the blank rebuttal sheet, which I have, I do have some examples that I can go over and go over what some of the rebuttals might be. For example, you might wake up and think, oh God, my hair looks terrible. Why do I look so fat? Well, to say that you're really a perfectly slim person and that your hair looks wonderful is not really believable if your thought right before that is, oh God, my hair looks terrible and why do I look so fat? So it's important that your rebuttals be something that you really do believe. So in this case, I wrote down, nobody I'd want to be friends with would judge me badly just because I have a bad hair day. And as to my weight, yes, I'd like to lose a few pounds, but I'm not fat. I'm attractive in some ways and average in other ways, and that's okay. Well, that you could believe. And it breaks up the cycle of negative thoughts that, like a fast-moving car, can be hard to stop. So as a teen, I used to have this thought that I better not say anything, I'll look stupid. And that would go around my head over and over and over again. And finally, I came up with a rebuttal that worked for me. And that is, if I don't say anything, I'll look stupid. If I do say something, I may look stupid, I may not, but it will move me closer towards my goal of having friends. And I would say that over and over in my head as a rebuttal to, if I say something, I'll look stupid. And eventually it helped me to get over my shyness, over my suicidal thoughts, and over my persistent self-dislike. Now, I was a master of self-dislike, and I'm happy to report that over the years, I really have gone over that to such extent that it's even hard for me to have any type of self-dislike thought at all. And one of the ways I did that was by becoming aware of the tone of the voice of self-dislike. It was like an incredibly abusive parent, where I would sometimes go, "Oh, you better not say that, you'll look stupid," or "That was totally idiotic to do that." It was almost like somebody was yelling at me. Well, one day I realized it was like somebody yelling at me. In fact, I had a stepfather that used to sometimes say stuff like that. So what I imagined was that this was like my stepfather. It wasn't me, and I called that voice in my head Bertha. And by calling it Bertha, I was able to kind of make fun of it. And when you make fun of something, it kind of creates a distance between you and it. So I would say, "Oh yeah, that's the voice of Bertha." Or I'd say, "Hi Bertha, thank you for sharing. I'm not interested in what you have to say." And just that little humorous distance helped me to lessen the impact of those thoughts. Now years later, I created a method that helped me even more, and I had read about in a book called the Disney Voice Method. And in the Disney voice method, what you do is you change the tone of that voice in your head. In this case, it was kind of angry and abusive, to something that strikes you as funny. So I changed the tone of that voice in my head to sounding like Mickey Mouse. Now, what does Mickey Mouse sound like? Well, if you ever saw the old cartoons, Mickey Mouse has a very high, squeaky voice. So I would imagine him saying, "You better not do that, you'll look really stupid." Well, it's hard to take that voice really seriously. And in fact, I would say those negative things in my head in that high, squeaky voice, and it would make me smile. So by changing the tone of the voice in your head to sound like Mickey Mouse or Daffy Duck or your favorite cartoon character, I know a lot of people use the voice of Ellen DeGeneres in the film Finding Nemo. And it can make you smile, and it can make you realize that that voice, that self-destructive negative voice in your head, is not you. Because when you change the tone, it changes your reaction. And that is very, very powerful. So by changing the tone, by creating some distance, by recognizing that it's not you, you create a situation where you are no longer inundated by negativity. But the single most effective method most people find is a combination of these methods. I say the single most effective, it's really a combination of methods, and only by trying several will you find what works for you. But in my life where I have tried several, I have found that if I really have some time writing out the exact thing I'm thinking and then coming up with a rebuttal is incredibly useful. Because until you come up with a rebuttal, that negative thought pattern tends to be there and fester. And it takes some work to come up with a rebuttal, but a good rebuttal has a way of ending negative thought patterns that could be like a flu, where it just makes you feel worse and worse and worse. I'll give you an example of something that happened to me yesterday. I had a couple of friends tell me that they were going to go on vacation to New York. And these are good friends of mine, but they didn't invite me. So I went into the negative thought pattern of magnification and personalization. I magnified how bad it was. You know, nobody ever invites me. And I also made it personalized, meaning I made it so that I was thinking, well, it must be something I've done or something I haven't done that made him not want to invite me. Well, I was working myself up into a tizzy, and then I wrote down my thoughts. And then I looked at them. And then I said, what would be a rebuttal to these thoughts? And it had to be one that I believed, because if I made it overly positive or overly anything, I probably wouldn't believe it. So one rebuttal I came up with is that I really have no idea why they didn't invite me, and it may have nothing to do with me, and I should check that out, which I did, and it ends up it had nothing to do with me, and once I checked it out, I felt better. But another rebuttal I came up with at the time was asking myself the question, what could be good about this? And this is a really key question that has helped a lot of people. The question, once again, is what could be good about this? Well, in this example, I really did not want to go to New York. I didn't want to be rejected by my friends, but I really did not want to go to New York. I got a lot of things I'm doing, which I'm excited about. And had they asked me to go to New York, I would have been in a very difficult situation. So a lot of times by asking yourself what could be good about something, you can reinterpret it in a way that is helpful. And that's a question that many people I know have used to really change their thought patterns around. Just because it's one simple sentence does not mean that it can't impact your life in a large way. And, you know, bad things happen to people. Good things happen, bad things happen. We all have to deal with stress. But if you have a simple sentence that you can say to yourself that changes your thought patterns, such as, what could be good about this? And you can entertain those thought patterns, then it at least makes you less sure of your negative thinking. Now, another question you could ask is, will these worries matter in 5 years? Sometimes that bigger perspective can be useful because it makes you see that you're making a mountain out of a molehill. So those two questions, what could be good about this, or will this even matter in 5 years, are great little techniques to come up with rebuttals that help you to overcome your negative thought patterns. Now, of course, all of this is in your key points for week two summary sheet, and they're all listed under your suggested exercises for week two, and they're all listed in your rating sheet. So you'll have many reminders, and you'll be able to go back to these little reminders to remember exactly what we're talking about. Now, something which I know Dr. Miller has really focused on is the idea of power phrases as an antidote to negative thought patterns. And I thought I'd let him talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, there's a little story that Ronald Reagan told. It was a story about two little boys, one of whom was a negative thinker and the other was a positive thinker. So they took the negative thinker and they put him in a gymnasium that was completely filled with every imaginable toy and video game and pinball machine you can imagine. And they said, you can stay here all day and play with anything that you want. And they took the positive thinking little boy and they put him in a gymnasium that was filled with horse manure and said, we'll be back to get you at the end of the day. Well, they came back at the end of the day and the little negative thinking boy, he was still sitting in the same chair that he sat in when they first brought him into the room. He hadn't moved, and he was crying. He said, I am so glad to see you hadn't touched a toy the whole day. And he said, you know, all of these toys, I was afraid to play with any of them because if I broke them, then you'd be angry with me. And if it didn't break, but I was playing with it, then I'd have to give it up at the end of the day, and I would be really sad. I'm so glad you rescued me. And then they go into the other gymnasium, and the positive thinking little boy is whistling away and digging. He's got a pitchfork, and he's just digging away. And he said, well, you know, why are you so happy, and what are you digging for? He says, hey, with all this horse manure around, there's bound to be a pony somewhere. And the point he's trying to, obviously, this is a bit of a hyperbolic exaggeration, but The point is that our experience is very, very dependent upon the thoughts we're having and what we're telling ourselves, what our internal dialogue is. And those thoughts that we tell ourselves inside really are software for the mind. And if you've got bad software, well, garbage in, garbage out. And many people, particularly the most negative people, are the ones who heard messages in their childhood like, you're not smart enough, you always screw up, you never live up to your potential, why can't you be like your brother, and so forth. And when we hear something again and again and again, that internal part of the mind, that paleocortex, begins to believe it's true simply because it's been heard so many times. Sometimes our political parties keep repeating the same falsehoods over and over again, and guess what? People believe them. Now, here's the amazing thing about the thoughts that are going through your mind. Try this. Think about a helicopter. Now, think about an apple. Now, think about a dog. Now, think about a jet plane. Think about the roof of a house. Think about a pencil, and think about your phone number. No problem. You can do that instantly. Now try to think of all of them at the same time. You can't. That's what I call selective awareness. Your brain can think of any of millions or billions of different things in a moment's notice, but in fact, you can only think about one thing at a time very effectively. And so our way of reprogramming that internal part of our mind is often best done through the use of what we call power phrases. And so our question is, what are the thoughts that if we were to think these thoughts continuously, this would lead to our feeling better, being more healthy, and being more successful? And so we've put together some of those phrases. Now, just think to yourself, I have the power to choose my thoughts, and by choosing my thoughts wisely, I can choose my emotions and my actions. There, you thought it, but it didn't make much of a change in you, did it? Think about it. That's a very profound thought. Now do this. Empty your mind. Don't think about anyone else. Don't think about anywhere else. Allow yourself to be here in the present moment. Focus all of your awareness now on the words as I speak them, and then repeat them to yourself in your own mind. I have the power to choose my thoughts, and by choosing my thoughts wisely, I choose my emotions and my actions. Now feel the truth of that. Feel the power that comes when you think that. Now you repeat that over and over to yourself. And what we're going to do is to provide you with a list of power phrases. Sometimes people call these power affirmations. And as you think these thoughts, I want you to imagine that there's a part of you that's capable of believing them and making them come true. And you can even imagine yourself a week or a month from now. Imagine that you've jumped ahead in time and you're thinking this power phrase. I accept myself exactly as I am at this moment in time. And feel the truth of this, and feel what it feels like, and you can get a sense within of fully accepting yourself. At any rate, as you begin to use these power phrases, you'll begin to notice the changes that happen in your life. Check out the power phrases sheet now.
There's another way of tuning into empowering thoughts that I have used that I have found to be very effective. I call it the five problem-solving questions. And it consists of, well, you probably guessed it, five questions that I ask myself. that can be used whenever I feel negative or feel overwhelmed. I simply ask these questions, and it helps me to get into positive action. And when you're in positive action, that's a great antidote for negative momentum. So let me give an example. Now, on your sheet called Key Points for Week 2, I have these five questions towards the bottom of the page. And the first question is, in a single sentence, what's the problem? So let's say you have a problem with your mate. About a month ago, I did have a problem with my mate in that she was traveling more than I would have liked, and I wasn't seeing her as much as I wanted. And soon I was going into negative thinking, oh, maybe we're having a problem in our relationship, and blah, 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 and you know how that type of thinking can go. So I said, in a single sentence, what's the problem? I said, well, in a single sentence, the problem is I'm not seeing my wife as much as I would like to because she's traveling a lot for work. Question number two, exactly what would I like to be different about this situation? Well, what I'd like to be different is I'd like to see her more often. And I'd like to coordinate our schedules so we're not away so much. And I would like to feel closer and more intimate with her more often. Just doing that actually helped to clarify what was going on, because once again, in our head, we go off into magnifications and personalizations and labeling and all the thought mistakes we talked about earlier, and that can create quite a problem. Third question, are there any people or resources that may be able to help me with handling this problem effectively? Well, like you, I had friends. And I talked to one of my friends, and he put it all in perspective, and he was a tremendous help. So you might have friends or books or audio downloads like this that by listening to them help you immediately feel better. And this question helps to remind you of that simple fact. The fourth question, how can I break this problem down into bite-sized steps? This is a really key question and very helpful. Because when we get into negative thinking, we often get overwhelmed and we don't see that there are simple things we can do that can make a tremendous difference. So when I asked this question of myself, I said, well, I can break this down into bite-sized steps by one, talking to my wife about it, two, talking to a friend about it, three, getting out our calendars and making sure they're better coordinated, and four, expressing really what I wanted with my wife, which was more intimate quality time together. None of these steps took very long and none of them were overwhelming to do. And once I wrote down the steps, it was just a matter of doing them one by one. I was able to do all those steps within an hour. And the last question, what is the first action step I'll take in handling this problem and by when will I get it done? Well, I said the first action step I'll take is talk to my friend just so I have his perspective. I did that immediately. The second action step I was able to do about an hour later when I talked to my wife. So I went from a feeling of overwhelm and negative thinking and negative momentum to a feeling like, oh, this is not a big problem and I can handle it in an hour. And I can't tell you how many times I've done that. Sometimes your negative thinking needs a structure to get back on track. You know, when a train derails, all it needs to do is derail a few inches and soon the whole thing derails and it causes a crash. But when you get back on track, soon you can be going in a positive direction quickly and easily. So I encourage people who do these five problem-solving questions to write down their answers and immediately take action. And when you do that, you're going to feel immediately better. It's really quite a shift. Now, you only know that if you try it. And I understand it takes a little bit of effort, a couple minutes of effort to do this. But if you are willing to put in that effort, you'll notice that your thinking goes from negative to neutral or positive in just a couple short minutes. Now, of course, to keep you out of overwhelm, we do have this rating sheet that, as we talked about last week, helps you to keep track of what exercises you do and helps you to know which ones are the most effective. Now, it may be that you only do one or two for a couple minutes, but that is more than you did before, and you may find that you have a secret key that can interrupt your negative thinking. And once you have that key, you have it for the rest of your life. And you can then have hope that by using these simple keys, in the future, when you get into negative thinking, you can pull yourself out much more quickly. This stuff literally saved my life as a teenager, and it can save you from stress, anxiety, and depression. And speaking of saving one's life, part of this week is we have a suicide prevention contract. And the suicide prevention contract is basically something you sign that puts into detail who you'll contact when you get into trouble. And by signing it, you think of it as a contract with yourself that can make it that in the future, if you ever get into a momentum of suicidal thoughts, you'll have a way of stopping yourself before you create any kind of true physical harm.
So it's, if you're suicidal already, it's useful right away. But for most of us, it's good to have it on hand because you never know what might happen in the future. One thing to remember, however, that simply listening to our words and understanding what those words are, while that's extremely valuable, it's not enough. In order for something to change, something has to change. To really get the full value out of this program, you're going to have to do something. It's not much, true, just 3 to 5 minutes a few times a day, but you still have to do it. But that should be easy, considering how much value you will receive, not only because you'll be feeling happy and happier every day, but because you'll be healthier and more successful in everything that you do.
And Dr. Miller mentioned 3 to 5 minutes several times a day. Actually, I think it really takes less than that because it really takes going against the initial 20 seconds of resistance. And by then, you have it easy. So it may only be a couple of efforts a day of going against that initial resistance and filling out your rating sheet. You know, the fact that we can interrupt momentum of negativity so quickly in a short period of time is really a no-brainer. And once you've done it a couple times, you'll be hooked. Mm-hmm. So we will catch you in anywhere from 5 to 10 days after you've done some of the assignments with the next session that deals with aspects of the physical body and how to learn to overcome stress, anxiety, and depression by doing little physical things that can make a world of difference.
And I might say that just for those few people who are listening who've reached such an extreme state of tension, frustration, or helplessness that they can't even try a simple exercise a minute or a few seconds a day, then you should probably get some support. This could be a close friend, a trusted relative, or even professional help.
That's it for this session. Good luck with the homework assignments, and we'll catch you next time.